This week's parsha is Shoftim, and one of the major areas that the parsha and specifically towards the end of the parsha deals with is the topic of milchama, of war, and a number of different details and laws regarding a Jewish war. Famously, the exceptions to those people who are exempted from going out to a war. And the whole discussion under what conditions does that apply? Someone who built a new house, someone who just got married, someone who planted a vineyard, someone who's is afraid to fight. There are lots of conversations, discussions regarding that. What I want to focus on, however, is what's mentioned at the very beginning of the last Aliyah of Shvi, and that is, should we fight a war, or when war comes upon us, should we try to do all that we can to avoid war? There's a interesting comment by the by Rav Hirsch, and we say every Shabbos, almost every Shabbos, we say Av HaRachamim, the tefillah that was composed after the first Crusades to commemorate those communities that were martyred, and it very powerfully and beautifully describes the dedication and the sanctity and the holiness of those people who gave up their lives, al kiddush Hashem, and then there's a transition in the middle of that paragraph where we turn to God and we ask that God should take a vengeance against these nations, these people who committed these atrocities, who murdered our people. We ask God to take vengeance, and it's very strong and it's very severe. But Rav Hirsch points out what we don't do is that we ourselves don't proclaim that we're going to take vengeance, that we're not the ones who are going to pick up arms and go out and attack and hit back, and that rather we ask God to do that. And Rav Hirsch suggests because the reason for that is because we're not a vengeful people. That's not our task. That's not we seek peace and harmony. And we don't. Once, of course, one's allowed to defend oneself. That's a given. The whole concept if someone is a rodeiv but pursuing you, you certainly are allowed to save yourself. But once it's over, once the danger is over, so we don't take. It's not our role to take vengeance. And it's interesting. Again, a little bit off topic, but a whole discussion about sometimes taking vengeance, actually being proactive in terms of defending yourself, because sometimes you need to take vengeance in order to send a message not to do this again to us. So that's all interesting conversation, especially today's day and age with the modern state of Israel and how Israel responds when tragic may unfold in terms of responding and taking vengeance. We first lived in a different era. And that was his understanding that at least at our core, there were people of peace. And it's not our job, it's not our responsibility. And certainly, once danger passes, for us to engage in warfare and to us to even to act in a vengeful way, to based on what happened in the past. So that brings us to our parsha, where the Torah then addresses, well, what happens when sometimes there's a necessity for war. And sometimes you're confronted with enemies, and how are you supposed to deal with that? And what should be your approach? Should your approach be to immediately pick up the sword and immediately go out and fight, or maybe you should first try to prevent that? Maybe if there's another path, another opportunity, some other way just to be able to prevent bloodshed from occurring, then maybe that's one's first option. So the Torah says the following. When you come to a city, to wage war against it. In other words, you're going out to wage war. Now, why would you wage war against that city? Now, there's a couple of reasons why you may wage war. It could be that they're about to attack you, so maybe you're being preemptive and you're attacking them. That could be one possibility. Another possibility is that maybe you're commanded to wage war against those people. Right, one of something that Moshe's been talking about up until this point in Sefer Devarim is the instruction to wipe out, to destroy the seven nations. So you're commanded to wage war in that situation. Or it could be Amalek, right? We're commanded to blot out the memory of Amalek. Or another possibility is sometimes we call, the Gemara refers to this as the Mechames Rishus, as an optional war, as opposed to Mechames Mitzvah, and when you're commanded to wage wars against the seven nations, sometimes it's an optional war. Sometimes, strictly speaking, you don't have to engage in war, but the government may feel it may be necessary. Maybe for in terms of expanding the borders in order to be able to need certain resources, you need more place for people to live. So the government may feel a need to be able to engage in warfare in certain situations. The Gemara says, Davnamelech, from time to time engage in such a warfare. So the Torah says, so it's unclear what time of war are we talking about. And that's what we'll see in a second. The commentators are going to discuss this. But it just introduces the topic as when you come to a city to engage in war, lilachem aleha, and then it says, v'karasa l'shalom, you shall first call out in peace. So right away, the Torah says, don't fight. First, see if there's a way to make shalom. There's a way to avoid bloodshed, to avoid conflict. You know, try to make to do something to avoid the this war. And the Torah continues, "Vayayim shalom ta'ancha," and if in fact that city responds with peace, that they don't want to fight, but they're willing to listen to what you have to say. So then, upascha lach. And again, they give an opening to you. So, interesting, the Torah says this is not going to be like you shake hands and everyone goes on their merry way, but you're engaging in this war because you need that territory. So you're going to be conquering it. You just don't want to, you want to avoid the bloodshed. So if those people agree to put down their arms, so what's the deal that you should make with them? They should pay some sort of tribute, some sort of taxes to you, and also they should then agree to serve you. They should agree to work for you, to be your servants. That will be a deal that will be acceptable, the Torah says. Imlota, but they're unwilling to that to those terms, and instead they're saying, no way, we're going to defend ourselves. So then vasasa, then you should wage war against them. Bitsarata, and you can besiege that city, and when God will now give over that city, that area to you, when you'll be successful, when you'll defeat them through God's assistance, so you shall kill, wipe out all the male people who are now fighting. You should kill out all the men. Everything else is in the city, the women, the children, the servants, the spoils, those that will be for you for your benefit. And you can eat what you find in the city. And then it says, Kain tasa l'chol ha'arim, so you shall do to all the cities, ha'rechokos mimchamot, who are very distant from you. Ashir lo maria grima as opposed to the cities that are nearby. So right away the Torah is addressing our question that we just asked a moment ago. What kind of war are we talking about? A Mechames Mitzvah, right? A mitzvah the Jews were commanded to wipe out the seven nations. Is this the nation, the people that we can offer peace to? Or perhaps is it only people further away? Only those Rishus, when optional war, when going out to that type of optional war, then you can try to make this deal. So it sounds like, and this is how Rashi reads these psukim, that this offer that you are allowed to make for peace is only in reference to these nations that are much further away from you. However, but those people who are from the seven nations that are living at the time in the land of Israel, God had told us back in Moshe told us that back in Parshas Akev, that because of their wickedness, God had decreed that they must be destroyed, that we must not live in their proximity and not learn from them. Those people, kol neshama, no one is allowed to live. You must wipe them out. There's no chance for peace. You can't work out any kind of deal. You must utterly destroy them. You should utterly destroy those seven nations. Why? For they should have learned from them. There's a reason that God Moshe was very specific a few parashas ago. There's a reason why they are being destroyed, being punished in such a fashion, because of their abominable practices, and you shouldn't learn at all from them. You shouldn't be in any close proximity to them. And therefore, you have to completely destroy them. They sin to Hashem, your God. Okay, that's the end of the parsha. And that's how Rashi reads it, which sounds pretty reasonable. Now, when it comes to nations more further away, a city that you feel you have to engage in some sort of conflict, you need to expand the borders for whatever reason, so that you should try to work out some kind of deal that they should give up, that they should serve you and give the taxes to you, but try to avoid bloodshed. And if not, then, you know, they say, well, they're going to fight, and you can wipe them out, but only the men, not the women and the children, the spoils, you can keep for yourselves. But the seven nations, you have to completely destroy. The Ramban, however, here disagrees with that reading. It's fascinating. The Ramban suggests that that's not the correct way to read these psukim. And actually, at the point of the contention between Rashi and Ramban is actually to explain a story in Tanakh that is very much impacted by this conversation, and that is a story of the Givonim, that when Yeshua had entered the land of Israel, so we're told in the Sefer Yeshua, there was these people, the Givonim, that in fact were part of the seven nations of Israel, and they knew the Jews were coming in. And what did they do? They didn't want to be destroyed. They were afraid, so they came up with this whole plan that they were going to make themselves appear that they were a nation coming from far, very far away. And they made themselves appear that they'd been traveling for months and months and months with poor and clothing and all dirty. And they were coming because they heard about the Jewish people. As Yashir talks about Shomu Amin Yigazu, and all the nations heard about the Jewish people. They left Egypt and the splitting of the sea, and they wanted to encounter the Jewish people. And so they come to Yoshua and then the desert, and they offer, you know, to become a servant of join the Jewish people. And Yeshua says, okay, you know, that you can join us. And then what happens? Then what happens after they make the peace deal with them, all of a sudden Yeshua finds out that they tricked them. They're one of the seven nations. And they need to be destroyed, but they can't destroy them because he just promised them that they wouldn't destroy them. So as a result, he basically told them that they have to be water carriers and things like that. But he was extremely upset. Now, according to Rashi, we understand the story very well. According to Rashi, why did the Givonim do this trick? Because had they not done this trick, they would have been destroyed. Right? Because the Jewish people were commanded to destroy them. And therefore, they had to concoct this whole, make up this whole story in order to save themselves. And because Yeshua promised them, they wouldn't destroy them, so he couldn't destroy them when he then found out they really were from one of the seven nations. However, the Ramban has a very different understanding. Because the Ramban suggests that the first option is always peace. The first, even of your biggest enemies, even of the seven nations, the first thing you have to do is you have to offer peace and try to avoid bloodshed. The Karasa Elel Shalom. Right, as the Torah says, right, and he's talking to, you know, the Jews are about to enter the land of Israel, about to encounter the seven nations. He tells them that when you come to the city of Hamalot to wage war against them, they karas to Elel Shalom. You have to offer them peace, And if they agree to it, so then wonderful, right? Then they should pay a tax, and they should help work for you, but avoid bloodshed. So now the question though is number one, you vote him in a second. Number two, how do we the psukim according to Ramban? So Ramban says as I read the psukim, according to this approach. Vimlotas taslimimach. Now, if they don't make peace for you, now he's going to split hairs, the Ramban. And now he's going to say, well, now it's going to depend who's not making peace with you. The first pasuk here is talking about a faraway nation. If that faraway nation doesn't make peace with you, then what should you do? Then you can kill the men, but don't kill the women and the children. They can be servants to you, and the spoils are you. And then a few psukim later, it says the following. It says, so should you do, and if they avoid, the Ramban read it this way, if they refuse to make peace with you, this is what you should do to all the nations that are rechokos, that are further away from you. Rak mirei amim, but the nations that these nations, that God nasan al-chal nachal, that God has given you for his inheritance, lo sechaya kol neshama. No one should live. Ramban suggests that's referring to only if they reject your when you try to make peace with them. At that point, you should destroy all of them. You should destroy all of them. All right. So what about these? So why, if the Givonim could have made peace with the Jewish people, so then why did they resort to trickery? The Ramban asks this question on himself. Right, notice the way the Ramban is Rashi reads these psukim as like as part A, part B. Part A is talking about everyone else, nations far away from you. Part B is talking about the seven nations. Part A is saying you have an option to offer peace. If they offer peace, then great. If they agree to peace, yes, if not, then is the conditions of the war. And part B is you can never offer peace to the seven nations. You have to totally destroy that. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says the opening pasuk is always the first approach to anyone. You offer peace. And then if they agree to peace, so they pay you taxes and they can work for you, and then great. Then the second part then of the psukim talks about what happens if anyone rejects offers for peace. But then the Torah says it depends. It depends if they're from further away, they're from the seven nations. If they're further away, you kill the men, not the women, the children. If the seven nations, you have to destroy all of them. So what about the Givonim according to that approach? They could have just agreed to peace from the get-go. So Ramban gives a couple possibilities, either that they didn't know that, they never read the Torah, so they just assumed that they were in trouble, or number two is that maybe initially they rejected the offer. And then all of a sudden they had second thoughts, so they had to figure out a way to trick them. So the Ramban tries to wiggle out of it. I'd just like to conclude and just to grapple with the question. You know, according to the Ramban, which somewhat on the one hand, the Ramban thing is resonates. Ramban is you should try to make peace even with your worst enemies. Avoid at any cost avoid warfare. You know, try to work things out. Try to figure out a way how you can live side by side, and then don't you pick up the sword, guns. There shouldn't be death and devastation. On the one hand, I think that very much resonates. On the other hand, the Torah itself in this parsha tells us why you have to destroy the seven nations, and that's because l'mana shir lo. This is pasuk yudchas. This is all parak. Where you should learn from them and learn to do all the abominations that they had engaged in, and why they were being destroyed in the first place. Why you're right, the Torah says in Parshat Ikev, Torah is like very strong. God says through Moshe, don't think you, the Jewish people, don't think you're inheriting the land because you're so righteous. You're not so righteous, God says to us. Only thing is that they're worse than you. Right? Because of all the risha, the wickedness that they engage in, they're not deserving of this land. And God promised the land to your forefathers. But the implication is that had the people not been so wicked, the Jews would have been able to right away to inherit the land so quickly. because they weren't necessarily deserving of it. So here it's saying in our parasha, it's saying that the reason why you have to destroy them is that you should learn from the Tov HaSam, from their abominations that they did, and they worship their gods. So the question is what if they do, according to Ramban, what happens if they do agree to your offer overtures of peace? Don't you still have that problem? Now you're going to be living side by side with them. Right? You may have avoided conflict, you may have avoided warfare, but now they're your neighbors. Now they potentially, you might be, they're right next to you, and you might learn from them. And if you think that concern is outlandish, well, read the Navi. That's exactly what happens. And the fact that they didn't destroy those nations, and they were still, a lot of them were still living there, the Jews were enticed. Jews were attracted to that mode of worship, to that philosophy that they had, and the Jews strayed. Again, it's just the entirety of the Torah, you know, or the Navi is all about this problem that ensued, that you didn't get rid of them. So, you know, according to the Ramban's approach, it seems to be somewhat problematic. That if you're going to let them live, you're still going to have this problem. And Ramban himself, when he cites this pasuk, he says, "The time asher lo yilamdu eschem lasos tuchot tevosam asher asu lo eloheim, yilamdu eschem la'avodas Hashem." They will teach you to worship even if you're going to still worship God, they're going to teach you to serve God in ways in which they worship. Right, and like, you know, he says, burning their children, the Srefas Benechem, the Sechem, the Chol Toivos, Asher Asan, all the ways that God hates. But even if you still, you know, serve Hashem, you're going to serve Hashem in ways that are so corrupt. You're going to sin to Hashem, your God. For God has warned you, right? You should not say, "How do these nations worship their gods?" That even I will do the same. So, if you're going to keep them around, so now you have a problem. You're going to be following them. So the only thing I could suggest is that perhaps be this uneven, unequal balance between you and them, that they'll need to be your servants. That this heavy tax will be placed upon them, that perhaps that itself will be the symbol and the reminder that the reason why they're being treated in such a fashion is because their way of life and their philosophy and not their philosophy, the abominations that they engage in terms of children and the illicit relation, all those things, is something for you to stay far away from. And maybe that would be enough of a warning to you to keep a distance and not to learn from them. I'm not sure, but I think it does emerge, and I think that this is a very relevant issue for our day and age. Is that rewinding ourselves 100 years, when the Jewish people, a little more than 100 years ago, when the Jewish people began to return, the Zionist movement began to return to Israel to create a modern state. So they necessarily find the seven nations there, but they found a population, people living there, and that's the question. What do you do when you have someone else living there who doesn't want you there, who's going to cause you all this grief and aggravation? What is the proper approach? How do you deal with that? And the Torah addresses that in this week's parasha, in terms of do you call out for peace, or is peace not an option? Is some neighbors so corrupt or so dangerous, or so undeserving that they're not, your own benefit you can't allow them to be there, or perhaps as a punishment they can't remain there? The Torah is warning us about this issue. And the question is, you know, especially living in today's day and age, you know, how do you react? How do you respond? How do you deal with these scenarios and these situations? We're just beginning the month of Elul right now, And one of the things that we daven over and over again as we lead into the Yom HaNorayim is that we ask for shalom. We ask that God should not place cherav. There shouldn't be a sword. That we ask and say, "Masat Togaf, who will live and who will die, and who will by the sword." And Abinam Akeinu over and over again. We talk about God should take vengeance. We said Rav Hirsch against those who have harmed us, those who have hurt us. We ask to be inscribed the Sefer Chaim, the Book of Life, and we ask that Hashem should the Sefer Chaim, the bracha of Shalom, for Nasa Tov, Nizal, because of Nacha, Nachma, Yisrael, Nacha, Chaim Tov, and Shalom. We ask Hashem for peace. And so there's what we ask for in theory, and then there's what in practice, in terms of reality, and the fact that we do have enemies, unfortunately, that are out to harm us. And what is the best approach in dealing with them? Should we pursue peace? And if we should pursue peace, what does that peace look like? How can that peace be one that guarantees our physical well-being as well as also our spiritual well-being? And what happens when that enemy rejects peace? What then should be our response? These are not just like theoretical questions, but these are real questions that in real time that the Jews dealt within the time of Yeshua, and unfortunately, we still deal with these questions today in our own day and age. Torah here is causing us to ponder and to consider these options and these perspectives. And sometimes there's no perfect choice. That either any approach has its benefits, but also has its unfortunately has a lot of consequences with them as well. But as a thinking people and a thoughtful people, we really need to consider, what confronts us, and hopefully make the best decisions to try to avoid the bloodshed. At the same time, to be very, very careful that those around us don't corrupt us, don't harm us, even when we're pursuing when we want to pursue a peace. Because sometimes one of the greatest dangers is that just we're so laser focused on peace, we don't realize that our enemies are not in agreement with us, don't have the same philosophy, and we're harming ourselves along the other way. It's not easy, and it's not simple. The Torah is outlining for us these challenges, and hopefully we can make the best decisions with Siyata Dishmaya, with ultimately with the help of heaven. Ultimately, Hashem should only bless us now and forever with shalom, with peace. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos.